Santa Cruz, and that fine edition of Democracy Now, the September 25th edition on the National Association of Broadcasters. We're hoping we can continue at a later time. It's now time for Bathrobs Piers Broadsides, the October 8th edition. Stay with us. And welcome again to Bathrob Spears Broadsides. Because we're a little slow this morning, I am going to play some more of this Democracy Now! Tape, which I had to interrupt in order to begin the show, and normally would have been postponed until a later time. It's probably already been aired, but it sounds so pertinent now with recent busts of free radio stations in the last week, and our free radio Santa Cruz station on full alert, that I think it's appropriate to continue with this, and I'm going to be doing a bit of this. Normally our show really focuses on low-income folks and homeless people and issues of civil rights in Santa Cruz itself, but this national issue of the castration, the hysterectomy, if you will, of Free Radio Santa Cruz, the closing down, of free radio stations everywhere, I'm sorry, this affects Santa Cruz and it affects micropower broadcasting generally. And so let's listen to a bit of this. And we're also going to be covering numerous other issues. The upcoming city council meeting has on the chopping block the Dolphin property. It actually is coming up for sale, I should say purchased by the city, at the open session at 5 o'clock on Tuesday the 10th. There is a series of other things happening this week that are important. A SCAN general membership meeting may heat up considerably unless the SCAN steering committee reverses a very interesting decision also related to this Dolphin matter, which has to do with the dissolution of the housing committee of SCAN, which had been pressing city council to respect tenant rights and to respect SCAN's May 31st resolution, which guarantees those rights by saying no tenants shall be evicted or removed or relocated unless they have other housing to go to, in essence guaranteeing for them that they're not going to get into a worse situation than they're in now. City Council, of course, has refused to do that, although it's claiming it's doing that, but we're going to be examining that whole issue. But now let's hear a little bit more of the show you were just listening to, Democracy Now! From September 25th on the situation for micropower broadcasting.
And also worked in commercial television. In the 1980s, my partners and I were awarded a construction permit by the FCC to build station KBBU-FM, a full-power FM station. I'm active in the community.
And that sounds like a pretty horrible hum there. Let's see what we can do about that by transferring playing around with our equipment a little bit. Let's see if we can proceed.
I serve as president of the Albuquerque City Council, of which I've been a member of for 11 years. I serve on the FCC's local and state government advisory committee. Quite frankly, I was surprised and concerned when I first learned that our network, NPR, was opposing the FCC's plan for low-power FM. I was surprised because I first read about it in the press. As you know, NPR is a membership organization. The stations are the members and are represented in NPR by we, the station managers. As a member, I had certainly never been asked or polled or otherwise consulted as to what our position would be prior to the network taking action. I felt a little bit like a citizen might feel if he woke up one morning to find that a new president had been elected, but nobody told him there was an election. Frankly, I really doubt that the position taken by the officers, and I understand this board, represents the true feelings of the men and women who work in National Public Radio and in our stations. When I heard about the low-power FM proposal, then called micro radio, I thought it was an exciting addition to the mix of non-commercial public radio. So many possibilities for partnerships between low-power FM stations and our NPR stations. I know that you have received or heard about a number of engineering studies of potential LP-FM interference, which seem to come to conflicting conclusions. Yet it's hard for me to believe that there are real issues here and that the real issue is technical. From the very first, I felt it was a good idea and that it could be done and done without harm to existing broadcasters or translator stations. The FCC, in its January 20th report and order, was quite conservative in extending protection out of the second adjacent channels. Now, in many areas of the country, there are translator stations operating on the second adjacent channel next to full-power radio stations. I'm not aware that this has created serious interference problems or, for that matter, many interference problems. If there are ever any interference issues, they certainly can be dealt with in the normal way by the FCC in a way that they deal with interference concerns. Even if there is a possible inconvenience of having to work out a few problems at the outer rims of our service areas, we must look at that in the light of the enormous potential for partnerships between our stations and the low-power FM stations and the great potential they have of bringing a new dimension to radio. We must remember that our mission is to serve our communities with radio service. I can do many things with our 100,000-watt radio station, but there are things that I can't do that a small radio station can do, run with very little expense and covering a very small area.
And that is, again, Democracy Now on the September 25th version. Our problem is that for some reason either the equipment or the tape sounds like it's not transmitting properly. So for those who really want to hear this tape again, you might want to give us a call and we'll let you know what's cooking and when it'll be rebroadcast. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Stay with us.
Einstein, James Dean, Brooklyn's got a winning team. Davy Crockett, Peter Pan, Elvis Presley, Disneyland, Bardo, Budapest, Alabama, Khrushchev, Princess Grace, Katy Grace, trouble in the Suez.
We didn't start the fire, then there's always murder since the world's concerned. We didn't start the fire, no, we didn't light it, but we tried to fight it.
And I just got a call from a technical person. Indeed, it is a tape fault, so luckily our equipment is still operating, and we are still operating. But remember, do keep alert, because at any time we may ask people to respond if our station is attacked by the Federal Communications Commission or its allies in local police departments. We need people to stand up, to write letters, to contact city council, even to come down to the secret location of the station and support us at that time. At least I think these are some of the options that we'll have, and you'll be hearing those suggestions on Free Radio if that happens. Or it could be that we will again be overlooked. California Free Radio stations have generally survived the onslaught of FCC close downs, which have been hit most heavily on the East Coast and in the Midwest, and in Texas recently, of course. So do stay alert, and our number, in case you want to get on board with the show today, is 427-3772. If you want to help the station off-air, or you have a PSA or a loop tape or some news, 427-4523 is our number, 427-4523, and you can record a PSA announcement if you'd like, or simply get in touch with us with any questions you have. Snail mail address is P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, 95061, webpage, where you can listen online to the station, is www.microradio.net/FRSC. Email frsc@microradio.net or frsc@cruzio.com, your choice. Again, if you've missed any of this information, you can call up 427-4523, and there should be a recorded message there that can help you. If it doesn't help you enough, leave a message. We'll get back to you and try to help you some more. My name is Robert Norse. I do a twice-weekly show on Free Radio Santa Cruz concerning civil rights in Santa Cruz itself. I try to get very local and very specific because I don't think we have enough focus in our local media on what's really going on here in terms of the rights of folks who are generally, if not ignored, trampled on or ground beneath the wheels, as it were. These may sound like overly colorful metaphors, but in fact, that's what happens daily, for example, in the courts with the infamous drug war, a war that no city council candidates, for instance, are talking about, a war that neither DA candidate is talking about. Neither Ruiz nor Canales seem to have spit to say about reining in this incredible juggernaut, which is carrying us all down the road, looting the Treasury, shredding the Constitution, and ruining hundreds of thousands of lives. And that's no exaggeration. I think that we had 700,000 marijuana arrests last year, and that is up. That's not down. People are being arrested more rather than less for completely innocent behavior. And I would include buying and selling marijuana as completely innocent behavior, just as I would include buying and selling any other herb or pharmaceutical, generally speaking, as innocent behavior, unless you're selling to a minor or you're mislabeling your product. This is important for folks who are real low income because they're out there on the streets and they face the police first, and that often becomes the basis for more charges. Not only do you get a ticket for sleeping ban activity, where in Santa Cruz under Municipal Code 6.36010A, you can be given a $54 ticket for falling asleep after 11 o'clock at night, or covering up with a blanket after 11 o'clock at night, or sleeping in your vehicle after 11 o'clock at night. All these things are still on the books and enforced, although not as rigidly and not as thoroughly and not as draconianly as they used to be, but still they're there. And if you look at the police reports currently on file at the City Council, you'll find tickets are being issued both by the police and the Parks and Rec Rangers, who we'd kind of hoped would be removed from the category of the sleep Gestapo, because that seems to be something that Parks and Rec Rangers don't really want to do, or maybe they do, but some of them at least don't want to do it. Similarly with the police department, they need to be directed not to give citations to people who are not violating other laws. This is something that Keith Sugar came out on really strongly 2 years ago when he actually made a proposal, which was beat down by council members Rotkin and Byers and the allies on the right, Hernandez and Matthews, and Fitzmaurice, of course, the Green Party light of the future, for which he received no censure, by the way, from the Green Party. Sugar's proposal that sleeping ban not be enforced unless there are other laws there was beat down. Only he and Crone stood up for it in 1998. But when he was asked to stand up for it again recently by Area Chamber of Commerce CEO Michael Schmidt, who works with a group called the Homeless Working Group and has been active for the last 9 months in really trying to put together safe sleeping zones, safe sleeping places, opening up the Emmeline Street parking lot at night for homeless people, all of which has been, of course, given a complete cold shoulder by the City Council and by the Board of Supervisors at the county level. When he approached Mayor Sugar again on this issue of, well, can you just say we won't be you won't be giving tickets unless you'll support the proposal, no tickets unless there's another crime. Oh no, we couldn't do that, said now Mayor Sugar. And this shows a complete retreat from a position of 2 years ago. No doubt some people will say this is because those activists have annoyed him so much that he's abandoned his civil rights position. Well, if somebody is going to do that, of course, they shouldn't be in office anyway. And you either stand by the issue or you don't, regardless of what you think of the personalities involved. So that is something that people need to look at. I'm going to be suggesting when people wear their buttons for the candidates, and there's a, of course, scan push for, what is it, Porter, Riley, and Bugenthal, they also had to put a big question mark on each of those buttons, a big question mark, indicating, yeah, sure, you know, I would like to see these people if they will answer clearly and stand strongly on certain basic issues. And the Homeless Working Group, under Schmidt and others, myself among them, have been working out a kind of a clear questionnaire for the candidates. We've actually interviewed, I think, 12, 13 of the candidates. Michael Hernandez and Stephen Stewart, I think, are the only candidates who've refused to come before us. So far, Hernandez was going to come before us on Friday, but declined because of ill health. He's been able to make the council meetings, so maybe his health has gotten worse. And he gave a kind of a... First he said, oh, no, I'm not coming to any meeting. And then he said, oh, well, Michael Schmidt has asked me if I can come. I got a sort of equivocal answer from him on that. And, you know, he's the only council candidate I know of who is having a private coming out party. That is to say, who's a kickoff party, that's what it is, where you announce your candidacy and you invite people to come and talk to you and discuss the issues and seek money and other kinds of support from people in the community. Hernandez apparently doesn't feel he's popular enough to do that, or maybe he has some other reason, but of course I think the reasons are that he has had a horrible record on city council for the last 4 years, as he had a horrible record on the Citizens Police Review Board before that, which he used as a stepping ladder, a kind of a sort of the stool to step up to city council, which is what, for example, Chair Arnie Leff of the Citizens Police Review Board is now trying to do, after having deep-sixed any police department record-keeping to deal with charges of racial profiling by the black community here in Santa Cruz. Arnie Leff, although that issue, he always puts that issue on the agenda, but it never goes anywhere, and he never makes a motion around it. So it's obvious that he doesn't have any intention of pressing that issue. He has two liberal supporters at least, Becky Blythe and Sandy Brown, who could act on that, and he has people like Dan Alper, who are kind of loose cannons who might well support him, and he has a couple of hacks like Jim King and Bruce Morse, and I say hacks because I mean that they're closely identified with the police department. At least that's my estimation of their votes and their statements on the board, and they're just... Oh, and Tony Guerrero is the other one. And there are people who are not likely to stand up for the rights of people who suggest that the police are out of control and who suggest that the police need a real overhaul, which is what candidate Steve Argue, for example, suggests, and I would back him up on that one. He's been, of course, under the baton end of the police department, ranging from trying to sell a street newspaper to a protest against the bombing of Yugoslavia back in May of 1999, to simply trying to inform someone on the streets of their civil rights in the summer of 1999. And he's now on probation, of course, but he's also running for city council, which I think is very significant. And I would encourage people to get in touch with him and his campaign at 457-9754, extension 1169. 457-9754, extension 1169. He's really the only candidate that I can see that is coming out very clearly on issues of community control of police, which requires the revamping of the police department, I would say. You need a new police chief, you need a new city manager, you need a new city attorney, and you need to stop pussyfooting around about it. You need to be very particular and specific and articulate the reasons why, the history of the city attorney's countenancing of Brown Act violations. That's the law that requires government to be open to you and me, and this is something that the city attorney has repeatedly allowed to be violated. It's, of course, the city council is they're the first culprits, but the city attorney has also been in line with that. He's defended secrecy and closed process in the police department around the independent investigation. He's defended an inappropriate process where the Citizens Police Review Board Committee and the City Council as a joint committee are meeting behind closed doors to essentially do nothing, by the way, and they never, once those meetings were opened up by some activists, including myself, in February, they held one more meeting in July, and since then, no further meetings have been held. And Arnie Leff is the chair of that committee, for all you Green Party Arnie Leff supporters out there who somehow think that Arnie is the cat's meow or he's going to improve. And with time, like a wine, I think he will grow more sour with time. I got to tell you, someone who's been given 2 years on the Police Review Board and has come up with no action on the racial profiling issue, no action to deal with the independent investigation being closed down and stamped classified, no action on any kind of public hearing for any complaint over the last 2 years, no action on complaints against the police chief. In fact, he's apologized to the police chief after initially taking a kind of a minor corrective stand, saying Police Chief Belcher should have told his sergeants that selling a street newspaper is a legal activity for homeless people. They don't need a license to do it because it's on the books in the statutes, and cases have come before the police department already. After that criticism and the wails of outrage from Police Chief Steve Belcher, Arnie Leff came back with a, oh, we made a mistake, we flubbed. There's no actual memo from the city attorney that says this. We didn't quote, we quoted a memo that wasn't really there. But in fact, they referred to a policy by Police Chief Belcher that was there, which was to allow sergeants and officers on the beat, like Officer Garner, who essentially threw to the ground and roughed up Steve Argue for selling a street newspaper and for not showing sufficient deference to his authority, when Argue said to Garner, you know, leave me alone, I'm trying to do something legal, get off my case. And instead, this police officer demanded a kind of obeisance, a kind of servility from Argue, in a completely inappropriate stop. I call it a false arrest. Again, the Citizens Police Review Board will hear nothing of that. They've rejected this idea, and they said that unless Steve behaves very, very properly, and then maybe many years down the road, when he can, takes it to court, he should essentially submit without a word to these kinds of police depredations. And Leff has backed all this up, too. So, we have an opportunity to make our opinions count, at least at the polls, where I suggest you just vote for Argue and don't vote for anybody else. And the reason I say that is, even though there are four seats open, if you don't vote in the other three seats, you make it more likely that your vote for Steve Argue will count. Now, there's some candidates who also are running who had initially said they favored activity to restore civil rights to homeless people in Santa Cruz, people like Jake Fathy. He's a student up at UCSC. People like Bonnie Moore, who's a labor candidate, a bus driver. People like Scott Bugenthal, who is, though he is a SCAN-endorsed candidate, he came out pretty clearly in private conversations and at the Homeless Working Group on tape for ending the sleeping ban, of course, immediately followed by his talk about safe sleeping zones. And I've discussed the confusion there. Candidates who talk to you about safe sleeping zones for Santa Cruz's 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people need to be very particular about where they're going to put them, because otherwise it's a way of ducking the issue. The issue is, until those safe sleeping zones are available, will you decriminalize sleeping for homeless people if no other laws are being violated? And, of course, you'll immediately hear a torrent, oh, they'll go after me because people will be sleeping on the streets and the neighbors will complain and everybody will jump up and down. You know, well, in that happened over in Miami, Florida. People jumped up and down when the federal courts ordered safe sleeping zones. And no doubt it's happening in Austin, Texas, where the courts have ruled, in Portland, Oregon, where the courts have ruled the sleeping bans illegal. But the fact of the matter is, there are constitutional rights, and indeed in Miami they found that when people saw these folks on the streets, they started voting much more money for social services, because for the first time people were no longer invisible, and they had to admit that they couldn't just use the police to hustle people off in the bushes to deal with the problem that is really there and really pressing and gets worse as the winter approaches. And I remind people that there are 28 emergency sleeping spaces. That's not 28 garages full of spaces. That's 28 floor spaces, spaces for 28 people tonight. And they counted more than 1,200 homeless people, a couple hundred of them in shelter, in actually about 150 in shelter in March of 2000, some months ago, with this official United Way Human Needs Assessment census. So it's bad. It's bad. The council is doing nothing. The candidates are saying nothing. We've asked candidates at forums to say, I will end the sleeping ban if I can. I will at least put it on the agenda. I will vote for it. I will vote for it before the Christmas vacation, and I will speak about it at forums when the issue of homelessness is brought up. I will say I will strike sections A and B of 6.36010, which is the municipal code of the city, which is the sleeping ban and the blanket ban. And I also favor safe sleeping spaces, and I want to see those set up, and I'd like to see those set up immediately, but first I favor ending the sleeping ban. And the reason you have to do the first thing is because, as you've seen from the recent activities at City Council in the last year, in spite of fasts by David Silva, pie in the pusser demos by myself and others, and Huff, sit-ins in City Council offices, call-ins by Bernice Belton and SCAN members to try to get the City Council to act on the Homeless Issues Task Force recommendations, they've all been ignored by Santa Cruz City Council, and they are not being furthered by City Council candidates. City Council candidates are schmoozing the issue. And that includes Ed Porter. That includes Dick DeBrava. Dick DeBrava has actually come out directly and said he won't end the sleeping ban. And Ed Porter has been fuddling around on the issue. We talked about that last time. He's saying, well, maybe we could put him in the community room of the police station, which may not sound as fantastic as it sounds, because it may not be as fantastic as it sounds, because it was proposed last spring that the Police Department parking lot be used as a safe-from-ticket sleeping zone for homeless people. Rejected by the Police Department, of course. And I would say if any of these candidates tell you they have a safe sleeping zone proposal, say, good, what is it? Have you talked to any of the relevant authorities, as the rest of us have, or is this just your way of shining us on with a smile and a pat on the butt? Because that really seems to be what it is. The Homeless Working Group has come up with essentially three main questions for city council candidates, and we suggest you ask these questions. Wear a button that has, if you have a candidate that you actually think will make some change, other than Steve Argue, wear that button, but put a big black marker question mark over the candidate, because now the people say, why do you have a question mark on the button? You can say, well, I'm waiting for my candidate to come out on these three important issues. I really want this to happen. And I think if people did this around the city, the candidates would very soon start to come out. So I encourage people to do that. You can get the buttons from candidates usually at these forums. I think the next forum is October 13th, the Chamber of Commerce, which is, it was holding it at City Hall. I think they still are. When the Homeless Committee of SCAN, of which I am a member, and more about this in a moment, arranged to have the City Hall quarters used for a candidate briefing on the issue of the homeless census. Suddenly, Keith Sugar got all excited, and City Clerk Leslie Cook apparently also got concerned, because somehow they felt this was a political purpose, and they denied City Council chambers in a quick and dirty slipping through of new rules for the City Council and how it could be used, City Council chambers, in the 90 days before election. Apparently, they couldn't be used except under very rigid and specific circumstances. And those had to do with every question asked had to be the same, had to be asked of all the candidates, can't do a presentation to the candidates. So, for example, they also eliminated what we originally thought was going to be the location for the Dolphin Lee Forum, the forum on the beach flats, apartment buildings, that one of which is now being purchased by the city and given to Mercy Charities Housing, which we really seriously fear, many of us, that many of those tenants will be evicted, told to move, displaced. And that was what that forum was about, and it was about holding the city council to basic standards of not making matters worse for low-income Spanish-speaking people that allegedly are trying to help, something that was supported by the SCAN general membership on May 31st, when they 2-1 voted no further progress on the Dolphin Lee project. Let's have a forum, and let's make sure those guarantees are in place. This was the same very notorious meeting, the SCAN meeting of May 31st, where Mayor Sugar made his comments to the community, to the world, and particularly to the tenants of the Lee and the Dolphin who were there, and telling them that they were living in filthy, squalid conditions, packed in like sardines, and suggesting that if they had a problem with that, well, there was always Mexico they could go to. It was an outrageous and racist statement, which I think the mayor tried to clarify later, and in his own grandiose, arrogant way, apologize for. After that, he met with some of the Lee tenants in several meetings, but he didn't hear them. He didn't present their proposal about the guarantees they wanted. Instead, on July 25th, Mayor Sugar voted to second a resolution by Catherine Byers that cut half the tenants completely out of the project, completely out of the negotiations, and focused on the lesser well-organized half at the Dolphin apartments, and then declared without any discussion or debate and of any significant sort, considering any alternatives, that this property would be handed over to Mercy Charities Housing without any requirement for written guarantees. That is what's coming up for a final vote today. It's already been done, actually, on July 25th. They did that, but now they're coming up with an actual sale, authorization to purchase this property. Then this, again, is the Redevelopment Agency, which is just the group that we elected these city council members to rein in, control, and return to a public useful purpose. They're not doing that, of course. They're letting themselves be used as pawns of this group. They're proceeding with Catherine Byers' plans, with Mercy Charities Housing's plans. And them's not good plans. Well, I could go on for a while, and I will, and I hope you go on to City Council and call them at 420-5017, 420-5017. That's where you can catch them 24 hours a day, that is to say you catch their message line, and tell them, On Tuesday, no purchase of the Dolphin without guarantees that protect not just, quote, legal residents, that's say people who are on the lease, but anybody who's paying rent, because a lot of people are paying rent in those apartments who are not on the lease. And you could state, say, as of October 5th or October 1st or October 30th or October, however you want it. I mean, so that the people do not immediately rush in to stuff the apartments. Let's say everyone as of October 1st who's paying rent on those apartments should not be evicted just because they're not on the lease. And 420-5017 is the number to call to give that message to City Council. Now, that is a message that apparently scan insiders do not want broadcast. And I'm talking about people like Nora Hockwin and Bernice Belton, who are powerhouses on the SCAN Steering Committee, and because on Wednesday evening, the SCAN Steering Committee voted to dissolve the Housing Committee of SCAN. And they also voted to disaffiliate themselves from the Dolphin Forum of October 28th, which is planned to be the community TV affair where candidates are invited, tenants are invited, the community is invited. It'll go out from 1 to 4, the first 2 hours, to be televised. This is a very strange, unprecedented action by the steering committee. It was actually undertaken with no members of the housing committee invited to be there. There happened to be a member who was not really a full-time, long-term member of the housing committee. He hadn't been at a lot of the meetings. He'd been at a few, Fred Geiger. But they didn't hear from the housing committee in opposition. They simply made this decision. And coming at this key time, it is a decision which really is a way of trying to me, stampede people into accepting this Dolphin deal, this deal of buy the Dolphin property without guarantees, give it to Mercy Charities, but don't require them to protect the tenants. And let's put an end to this whole controversy by stamping the forum illegitimate because SCAN isn't endorsing it and eliminating the Housing Committee, which has repeatedly been sending letters to the City Council, to Council Member Byers, to other people saying, in essence, well, it's actually to the City Council and to buyers, and appearing and reading those letters and saying, we remind you that on May 31st, SCAN voted, don't proceed further on this project until there are legally binding guarantees for everybody. And, of course, the City Council doesn't like to work that way. They want to operate behind closed doors. This is going to be the first open session of the Redevelopment Agency, and it's essentially, it looks like a done deal. They're coming out with their votes all lined up to purchase this property and to do so in a fashion which does not protect all the tenants there. And it's a very interesting situation. It's one where we need to show up in force at City Council and to call City Council at 420-5017. There's also a SCAN General Membership meeting on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. I believe it's in the community room of the police station. Strange place to hold a SCAN meeting, but there you go. Maybe it shows where things are going these days. That's where the Downtown Neighbors held their City Council Candidate Forum. This is the somewhat bigoted group that opposed having a sleeping ban relaxation anywhere in the city, but proposed no alternatives where homeless people could go. And they have repeatedly tried to scare the community and City Council by raising the specter of homeless people as child molesters, homeless people as burglars, homeless people as drug addicts, homeless people as people to be feared and suspected. And they've also been big on the drug war. This is the Downtown Neighbors Association, the group that met in the police station's community room, where SCAN will be having its meeting on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. General membership meeting, I think it's open to the public, too. You have to be a member to vote, but I believe it's open to the public. I've attended it for many years when I wasn't a SCAN member. I joined SCAN, and The ripples apparently seem to be splashing in my face. We're going to talk about that more later in the show. The Housing Committee members have asked the SCAN Steering Committee to turn this whole thing around, to reestablish the Housing Committee, or to say we're going to wait to discuss it at a meeting where the Housing Committee can actually be there to talk about it. A meeting, by the way, that is not in somebody's private house, which is where this last SCAN Steering Committee was, at a meeting where everyone is informed and has a chance to actually present their arguments. If the movers and shakers behind this, Nora Hockman and Bernice Belton, actually think they want to put this thing out in the light of day. These two have been pushing to kill any Dolphin Forum before the elections. They tried to kill the May 31st resolution. They are not interested in any kind of opposition to Mercy Charities Housing. Bernice Belton sits on the board of the advisory committee of Mercy Charities Housing. Now, I got to say this. Bernice Belton is not some evil person who's running around trying to ruin everything for everybody. But on this issue, she's made some very unwise choices, and she is a key power at the center of SCAN. She has been for years. And a lot of people on that steering committee apparently listen to her and then just dive, hold their nose, and vote, is what it looks like to me, because they had no reason to do what they did. The Housing Committee has been one of the most active committees in SCAN. And this might be considered, you know, a kind of, I mean, they sponsored the homeless census, which people may have seen on community television, which Paul Brindell did. He did a kind of a presentation about the startling figures which were determined this spring in the homeless census, showing a tripling of the homeless population in the area. And the SCAN Housing Committee were the people who, you know, backed that and supported that. There has been, you know, some acrimony in the SCAN Housing Committee because some folks want to go faster than others, and there's a tension there, and also there's an old guard that doesn't want to go anywhere, that wants to drag things back, that wants to say, oh, let the city council do what it wants with the tenants of the Dolphin. Oh, don't raise the issue of the sleeping ban. Don't let SCAN members vote on it. Don't pay any attention to what the Housing Committee has suggested be on the questionnaires for the candidates. None of our stuff got on the questionnaire, even though we presented it in time. There is a really serious problem inside SCAN on this issue, and I'm hoping it can be resolved without a lot of protest, but many of us are prepared to protest quite vigorously and loudly, and there may be some tenant protests coming from the Dolphin and Lee Apartments, both at the City Council meeting on Tuesday and at the SCAN general membership meeting on Wednesday. And for more information about this, you can always give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. You'll get a message right now, but just leave your name and number or your email address, and we'll get back to you on this issue. The real key here is, and this is the problem with SCAN, they want to elect their candidates. And this has become the obsessive focus of a lot of people around the election, and that's understandable. People want to get the best people they think elected. But the issues, at least for some of us, have always been more important than the candidates, and it's better to keep pushing the issues and educating on the issues than to try to run with some candidate who makes murky statements on it. Because we've seen what's happened, even with people who've made relatively forthright statements. Fitzmaurice Cronin Sugar made many forthright statements before they were elected. Now Sugar regularly violates the Brown Act, shuts people up at City Council. He promised a more open process, rubber stamps Catherine Byers, or runs before her in her attempt to muzzle the sleeping ban issue as she has for the last 2 years. Nothing on rent control. There's been no meaningful action in terms of any examination of the Seaside Company's destruction of rental housing in the beach flats. There's been no protection, just the opposite. Sugar, who promised to protect the tenants, seconded the resolution by buyers simply to give this whole thing over to the Dolphin property to Mercy Charities to manage without guarantees of protection. We see people who are not held accountable in a situation where they are in power, where you and I put them there, and they turn on us. And SCAN has not demanded any accountability for any of these people. There is no accountability demand. I also want to say that while I focus a lot on SCAN here, the same is true for people like Scott Kennedy, Mark Premack, right, Michael Hernandez, these retreads and other conservative candidates who want to run and are, you know, they're saying anything but the current SCAN mess. And I say, no, we don't want anything but the current SCAN mess. We want people who are committed to principles here. Ed Porter may have lots of good ideas, and he does, but he has to come out on issues, as far as I'm concerned, where he talks specifically about issues like the sleeping ban, rent control, community control of police, in ways we can understand that differentiate him from other candidates, and for which he can later be held accountable. There was a proposal we had here that candidates actually put money into an escrow fund, let's say around the sleeping ban issue, that if they've not at least voted to get the damn thing on the agenda before Christmas, that they would have to forfeit money to a fund that would go to make a civil rights lawsuit on behalf of homeless people who are currently being prosecuted under the sleeping ban. Nobody's taken us up on that. And, you know, David Silva had people staying awake at night without blankets and his sort of rotating and progressive fasts. One was a sleep fast, one was a food fast. People like Emily Riley, who did this, have now turned and, you know, bit us all in the butt. She's not going to support ending the sleeping ban. Dick DeBrava is not going to support ending the sleeping ban. Scott Bugenthal is, again, he says he is, but the next breath it's safe sleeping zones. So we don't know that he'll end subordinating the sleeping ban, but it's a confused situation. Again, I suggest people put a question mark on their little buttons and say, you know, I'm for this guy, but he has to answer these questions. I think that's the way to focus on the issues. Well, we're going to be talking more about this, and hopefully some folks out there will be calling in because we have a city council meeting coming up that hasn't even been mentioned in the Santa Cruz Sentinel. If you look in the Sunday Sentinel today, you'll see a whole list of events for the week. They mention the Citizens Police Rubber Stamping Board, which is on Monday. But on Tuesday, you don't see any city council meeting, and it's going to be a big city council meeting because although I think Attorney Kate Wells, who spoke on the air last time, is ill, she is really concerned that the medical marijuana clubs are being plowed under. Again, that's John Barisone at work. Why is he engaging in these behaviors? And why isn't Mayor Sugar coming up and saying, let's declare a medical emergency like they've done in other places, San Francisco, perhaps Oakland, I'm not sure. We heard Kate Wells talk about it last time, so that these clubs can operate while the little bureaucracies with their use permits and such go through their little processes. So people who are sick with AIDS and multiple sclerosis and diabetes and cancer can get their medicine and their treatment. Well, it isn't even on the agenda. Sugar wouldn't even put that on the agenda for three council meetings running. He doesn't return calls to Kate Wells, as I understand it. At least that's what she told us last time. And I believe that's correct. At least if he has returned a call, he hasn't said anything substantive on this issue. But she seemed to actually say he hadn't even talked to her for any meaningful length of time. She's grabbed him between meetings. These are the liberals, the progressives, the people that put forth the credentials that they were going to deal with these issues. You can't let them duck these issues, or they're simply hacks in power. And all the talk by well-intended people who say, oh, all we got to do is get Ed Porter and a couple more votes on there on, and we'll be all set, you know, and then we can start talking about these issues. But now we have to kind of schmooze the public to get elected. No. Call me an idealist. Call me a fanciful do-gooder. Call me an inveterate skeptic. Whatever you want to call me, call me. I'm at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. And this is your radio station, at least until the FCC comes marching in with a search warrant or a bunch of thugs with guns and clubs. So let's use this station while it still exists, and let's make sure these council candidates answer the questions. Let's make sure council candidates stand up and respond to the real issues. And let's make sure that they get very specific about what they're going to do, not some sort of vague stuff. Oh, I'm only one vote on the council. Oh, maybe I can't do anything, you know. No. What will you do alone if necessary in terms of pushing a position? Yeah, you might have to compromise that position somewhere down the road, but what will you bring up specifically at the city council meeting? Will you bring up the resolution that says you don't arrest homeless people just for sleeping or covering up with a blanket? Period. No ifs, ands, or buts. That if they're camping, okay, that's another matter. You go after them under the camping ordinance, though indeed that whole camping ordinance should be rewritten so that there are really legal places for people to camp. But sleeping, a basic human right, as we've been saying, as David Silva's been saying for the last 2 years, can't go after it. And when people like Arnie Leff on the Police Review Board do their duck and cover routine and they're still not holding meetings of the very important subcommittee that might propose strengthening the law, as supposed to propose strengthening the law, the basic Citizens Police Review Board law that would allow some real meaningful oversight of police if it were significantly strengthened and if there were real people on that board who actually might do something, it's not happening there. So instead we have somebody who's coming on with a smiling face, your friendly community doctor, and he's going to doctor things all right, but I don't think he's going to doctor things the way we want. He's not taking the positions he needs to take. He's not telling us what he's learned from his 2 years on the Citizens Police Review Board about what needs to be changed. Because, of course, he thinks he can do it behind the scenes by schmoozing the staff. And then the theory is, oh, if we have enough votes, maybe we can ease out the city manager. You know, get him to resign rather than fire him. Avoid a controversy. Avoid any real discussion of the issues at any cost, for heaven's sake. The issues are here. They're here for you to talk about. We're at Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772. I'm going to give us a break now. We're going to play a little something that we recorded 2 months ago. I was down in Los Angeles at the coronation of Al Gore. I wasn't given a front row seat. In fact, I was on the streets when the people around me were being hit with pepper spray packets and rubber bullets and police batons and trampled by horses. I was there when this kind of stuff was happening. And I was also at the Independent Media Center, which is a place, a very remarkable center. You may have heard about it from the reports of Skidmark Bob and the V-Man, and also Lady Scararms, I'm getting her name right there. Old Lady Scararms, actually, is what I'm hearing from the and of course Baby Greaser James. People who were down there from Free Radio Santa Cruz in Los Angeles at the Independent Media Center, which was a wonderful thing. It was set up so that people could come in from independent media and actually report what's going on and carry on a kind of independent media for other events that would happen after this. Hundreds, usually at a time, massed in the most remarkable military ways without any provocation. It's just amazing. We have a call here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. I'm part of this thing. Well, it's like a...
And you're on the air, by the way.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll try to make it articulate.
Oh, you're fine.
So, there's this thing called Progressive Secretary. And I thought, I just wanted to get some discussion on this because it's kind of an interesting phenomenon. It's an emailing program that you can set up just by logging on and subscribing. And they can send letters for you or send letters to you that you can send. And these are letters to all kinds of representatives. This is international, mm-hmm. You know, not just like local.
Now, have you been listening to our show?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So you think that, I mean, is there a way this could also affect our local politics here and the city council, which is keeping it illegal for homeless people to sleep, for instance?
Well, if there was meaningful discussion taking place on a chat board, maybe. But I don't think we need a chat board because it's local. But I don't mean to change the subject. I'm just wondering, like, if that seems effective, like emailing people and stuff like this, or... Like how much of it is demonstration and how much of it is just straight up trying to get messages across in mass quantity?
Are you talking about to politicians?
Yeah, I'm kind of talking about it in general. Like, for instance, we could go and we could have a big demonstration downtown. We could ride around the clock tower and make a lot of noise.
Mm-hmm.
We could have sleeping protests where we, like, sleep in front of some important building and block people's way.
Mm-hmm.
We could have puppet shows where
right.
we talk about things
or all
out
three.
In San Lorenzo Park, and it's a fundraiser for, you know, with music and stuff, and it's a fundraiser for the people that are backing us,
mm-hmm.
or which means that we're kind of becoming more organized,
right?
You know, or I don't know. There's so many different things, and letters and petitions was the last thing, and they're kind of like two-dimensional stuff. Like, you don't even deal with the people as much. You, like, because they're not dealing with us as people, you know? So it's like, how did the Dine people get this last... I forgot when it was, but Clinton supposedly signed this awful piece of literature, legislation
mm-hmm.
that while he was golfing.
Right.
Supposedly, and...
Okay.
You know, these people, they're not really that human. I think you said something about that, like, real people on the board. If they could tell us what they knew, you know, if they could say that they learned anything from their being in office, but it just doesn't seem like they're dealing with us as people, and I don't know what the best way is to try to reach them with any sort of message.
Well, I think all those ways are good. You have to decide, first of all, which you have...
Combining forces.
Yeah, combining forces. I also think the more, frankly for me, it's the more militant, the better. I mean, plus you want to send out a steady stream of letters to all the media, you know, organize it so that there's a constant... The issue is before the public, and the Sentinel will try to distort it and slant it and bury it, and so will, you know, the other media. But it'll get out there, and I think these ideas of marches downtown and protests, sleeping protests, perhaps even in front of the houses of the council members most responsible, I think that all
well, that's an idea as a different kind of place, but that would definitely not meet with favorable at all. Like, in most people's eyes, I don't think.
The other thing you can
do
is...
Not people's houses, you know?
Well, it's...
But, I was just wondering, what other kinds of media are there? Like, billboards is something maybe...
Yeah, well, you know, billboard alteration was a deal in Berkeley where they changed billboards subtly at night. Of course, this could be called vandalism. Others would call it public education. You know, billboards that glorified smoking and... were changed to show, you know, exactly what smoking leads to.
Well, that's definitely, I mean, very philosophically, it's a wonderful concept because these things that people take for granted as being bullshit maybe change overnight, and then there's this new. I mean, that's pretty inspiring.
It's also very funny, and gives people courage that they don't have to stay within, you know, the kind of narrow guidelines that our masters want us to stay within. There's also stuff like is happening in Santa Cruz. Tree sits. There's lockdowns.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff.
Would you mind? I really don't mean to go off course, but I'm very interested in the Ramsey Gulch tree sit, and I don't, like, know what's really going on.
And I don't have an update on that because I myself, like yourself, am probably more than you, are ignorant on that. Place to call to get information is you could call again the free radio line, and possibly Uncle Dennis would pick up on that, and that voicemail line is 427-4523, or you could call Earth First, and I'm looking around for an Earth First
number.
Well,
right on. I got to keep moving, but it was really good speaking with you.
All righty. Good to hear you.
So, yeah, there are many ways to proceed. I think that we have to keep stretching our imaginations here and as to what to do, because the old ways of, you know, your 3 minutes at city council, which I continue to do, almost like because I'm in a trance, though it goes out over television, and though I think it's still something that one can do, are not enough. You have to go and appeal to other groups of people who don't normally hear the news as to what's happening. You've got to go to use more dramatic means if basic civil rights are being routinely violated and ignored, as they are for homeless people. And I continue to think the best way to do this is nonviolent, that... The best way to do this is with a kind of a humorous aspect so that people can smile and say, boy, aren't these politicians stupid? Aren't they foolish? Don't they need to really change? It's not so much the politicians being stupid, it's the positions of the politicians being stupid. But the politicians have to be held accountable for their positions. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I appreciate the caller calling in. I'd like to get some more callers coming. I want to make a few announcements again. And there's a Citizens Police Review Board meeting coming up tomorrow at 5:30, something that I've promised to talk a little less and less about, so I'll try to talk very little about that. But if people want to confront Citizens Police Review Board people, they can do it there, and that's a place to talk to them and a place to demand they take some action rather than simply go through the motions of a meeting, which is what they like to do and what they have been doing. You'll hear endlessly from Sandy Brown, who's now co-chair of SCAN and on the police review board for a year and a half, 2 years, and also now she helps the Bugenthal campaign. She's a busy, busy woman, but she's too busy for people who want to make changes in the Citizens Police Review Board or have meaningful complaints, want to bring them forward. She just doesn't have time for them. Sorry. Similarly, you find Arnie Leff putting off all kinds of things. And it's not just because of the election. It's something he's been doing all along because he doesn't want to confront the police department and because he's gotten tired of the continuous demands of us. That's strange. I think we're getting an AM signal here. So let's try getting back to this tape, which I was going to put forward for you. That's the two months ago at the Democratic Party coronation, we had this very interesting interview with folks at the Independent Media Center, and we're going to play that now. Some of it concerns what happened to folks from Santa Cruz when they were stopped and stopped dead in their tracks, held illegally, and a whole broadcast was subverted by the LAPD and the Sheriff's Department down there.
Well, August 17th, going on August 18th, about 11 o'clock nearly. We're on the fire escape on the sixth floor of
Patriotic Hall. Ah! Looks like a nearly full moon out there. We're talking to Aaron. And Aaron, you're a Santa Cruz person, but now you're engaging in, you've been covering here at the Independent Media Center different stories for the last few days?
Yeah, I've been covering stories and working on a satellite transmission that we have nightly coming out of the Independent Media Center.
This was the one that was aborted by the phony bomb scare 2 days ago?
Yeah, that's correct. Monday night, our first night when we went up to for our first satellite broadcast, the Los Angeles Police Department came into our parking lot, entered our satellite truck, and told our engineer to leave, thereby canceling our show for the entire evening. Approximately 15 minutes later, one of the officers entered the van in question where the bomb was allegedly placed and declared that there was in fact no bomb and that everything was safe, but that since the bomb squad had been called and for other safety measures, we had to wait until the bomb squad arrived to survey the scene. Naturally, they took hours, the satellite broadcast was canceled, and a very expensive satellite uplink and time reservation was scrapped. In response to that, the ACLU, specifically Dan Takagi, a lawyer for the ACLU, is filing the third injunction against the Los Angeles Police Department to protect us, the Independent Media Center, from any further such instances.
Well, I know that they talked about filing an injunction after the beating of protesters that same night. Down at Figueroa and, near the convention center. What will be the nature of this injunction, and has that been filed for?
It's in process right now, and I don't have an update as to whether or not it's gone to court, but the nature of it would basically necessitate the LAPD to get approval from a federal judge before they interfere with any of our communications.
Now, have you been successfully broadcasting by satellite the last two nights?
The last two nights we have been successful in distributing live satellite television to 7 million satellite television subscribers across the nation on the Dish TV network.
And have you gotten any feedback from them as to how successful this has been?
We have not. I personally have not heard feedback from our broadcast, but here within the Independent Media Center, it's been nothing but an overwhelming appreciation for what we've done.
And now, the Independent Media Center is an entity of how long standing?
It all started in Seattle, WTO, November 1999. Media activists converging on the streets of Seattle with video cameras, audio cassette recorders, cameras, and journalists were there writing. Dan Merkel and Jeff Perlstein and various other media activists who had been working on with progressive media for quite some time decided to get together and form a coalition of grassroots media organizations, and where people on the streets could bring their photographs and cassette recordings and video to a central place where it would all be shared without copyrights, and distributed via internet, via documentary and radio and print to the world.
And when was the center actually set up?
During that time, in November in Seattle, during the World Trade Organization demonstrations, they rented a space in downtown Seattle, and during those 4 days, that's where everyone went with their media.
Similar to what's happening here.
Yeah, exactly like what's happening here. And since then, since that first Independent Media Center, we now have over 20 Independent Media Centers around the world. There's one in Congo, Africa. There's one in France. There's one in Italy. One in London. One in Belgrade. One in Prague. There's one in Windsor, Canada. There's one in Australia. There's many scattered throughout the United States. One just opened in Mexico. It's a revolution, and it's spreading very quickly, like wildfire.
Now, how long does the Independent Media Center survive? It seems you're saying it's a temporary deal, which takes place during the life of the protests?
Some are temporary and some are permanent. The Seattle Independent Media Center still exists, and it's been a central point of coordination for other independent media centers to spring up. Los Angeles is going to continue. This independent media center is not going to wither out and die. The space that we're in right now is not going to, we're not going to continue to rent this space, but many of the people who are working here are going to continue to be working with the footage and the resources that have been gathered during this week for the coming months, and hopefully the Independent Media Center in Los Angeles will be here for future events should they arise.
With us, we also have independent journalist Sue Supriano from Berkeley, California. Hey, Sue.
Hi, Robert. Yeah, I was in Seattle for like a month helping to get that started too. And now we're starting one. In fact, it's already just up on the internet in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, indybay.org, indybay.org. So it's just getting off the ground.
Who knows? Maybe Santa Cruz won't be far behind. Aaron, you were also around today for events, and maybe you can give us a quick update on what's been cooking on the streets.
Something interesting happened this evening at the Convergence space. This is the first time that I know of that the Los Angeles Police Department's Rampart Division converged upon the demonstrators' Convergence space. They did not enter the space because of the first injunction that Dan Takagi from the ACLU was able to win over for our side. But they did show up in large numbers in full riot gear.
When was this?
This was a few hours ago. I'm approximating about 8 or 9 o'clock this evening. They showed up in full riot gear and lined the street. They arrested a couple people for a minor traffic injunction. I believe it was jaywalking, okay? And then they stood there in a very intimidating manner, lined up, not budging, not answering any of our questions as to why they were there, just standing there in a very intimidating manner. Now, after about 30 to 40 minutes of nothing happening, the police started to disperse. At this time, someone from somewhere threw a bottle at an officer, and what they did was, rather than invading the conversion space, rather than coming toward any of the demonstrators that were there, they went a couple blocks down the street to a house where some immigrants are staying, took over the building, went up to one of the top floors, detained a young individual, Hispanic male, took him away in the car, and now that individual is probably in the Ramparts Police Department. And who knows what's happening to this individual? And the point of the story is, one thing that is very important for the demonstrators here to realize as we're out on the streets chanting our streets, you know, and demanding the right to peacefully assemble in what they call their streets, is to recognize that in reality these aren't their streets. These are the streets of the people who have been living in Los Angeles for quite some time. And this evening what happened was, we invited the Rampart Division of the Los Angeles Police Department down to the Convergence Center by acting in whatever way that they decided was, you know, illegal. And once they got there, they realized that nothing illegal was happening. A bottle was thrown. They took it out on the local community. And that needs to be addressed, and that's something that hasn't been addressed.
Now, is there any particular reason they selected that particular house? Do we know anything about that?
More information is coming in, and that's all I know at this time. But another issue that this brings up is Ted Hayes, who runs the Dome Village, which is
Justice Village,
right, where many homeless people live in Los Angeles. An interesting dynamic arose a couple weeks ago between him and the Independent Media Center. Ted Hayes put his foot down and said that any media that him and anyone and any homeless people who he works with captured during this time is theirs, and they have the exclusive right to give that media to whoever they want. Some people decided to interpret that as him saying that he was going to give media footage to the police department. Well, in fact, the reason that he has decided to say that he has the right to distribute the media to whoever he wants is because after this all boils over, after the demonstrators leave, after all of these white college students have left and go back to their respective towns, him and all of the people in the Dome Village are still in L.A. They're still going to be harassed by the Los Angeles Police Department. They're still under the oppression of very dangerous elements of the LAPD, like the Rampart Division, and unless they have a means of protecting themselves, they can't guarantee that their issues are going to be addressed and responded to during this week.
How does keeping the footage protect them? I don't understand.
It protects them in as much as, well, what happened tonight is a perfect illustration of how the footage will protect them. The demonstrators brought the LAPD to the convergence space.
Did they? I don't know. How did that happen?
Some people were jaywalking around the convergence space, and that's where they showed up. The police showed up to the convergence space, okay? The person who ended up getting arrested in the end was someone totally unrelated to this movement. He was somebody chilling in his house, you know, and because the community is so intimidated by the LAPD, he just left, and no one spoke up. No one rose up their fists and decried what the LAPD was doing, right? Well, the same thing is going to happen to the homeless, according to Ted Hayes, when we all leave. All of the frustration that the demonstrators are arousing within the LAPD is going to be released upon the homeless. And so by having media coverage and media footage, Ted Hayes and the rest of them will be able to prove that they were actually not the ones involved, that they have been peaceful, and that they should not be implicated for somebody else's faults.
Well, you heard the same kind of arguments about civil rights activists in the South, troublemakers, only usually it was Southern sheriffs who made the arguments rather than the black community. So, I mean, it is true that when, you know, you agitate in a community, sheriffs and deputies and police will take it out on other people. But really, that kind of goes with the territory. You know, that can't be the reason to stop agitating, at least from my point of view.
To stop agitating what?
For justice.
Oh, there was resolution. I mean, we're not stopping agitating. We're
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, I mean, we're out here.
Ted Hayes, by the way, as far as I'm concerned, isn't agitating for justice. He's agitating for a kind of personal glory. I heard him tonight. I was at his protest. It was designed to draw more attention to the Dome Village, to Justiceville, which I'm not sure I have a clear understanding of, because they were nice enough to me as a media person. They let me use their shower. They're nice people. But from what I hear from other homeless activists, and it's always dangerous to draw those kinds of conclusions, Ted is more concerned with the good opinion of the police department and high state officials and getting his own name in high and big red letters and big lights than any kind of coherent and tangible program around, you know, of the homeless community. He talks about the decriminalization of poverty, but if you look through his National Homeless Convention literature, he will not allow people to make critical statements of the police. Now, what is that all about?
Well, what that's all about is basically it's a political game of chess. If he doesn't watch his moves very carefully, if he doesn't give in to some extent to the demands and the requests of the Los Angeles Police Department, he's never going to get his way. He's been here for 30 years trying to fight for what. I mean, I'm not saying I agree with him, okay? But I'm just saying that there are two sides to this argument, and both need to be taken into consideration. And I think that the point that this really raises, that doesn't necessarily focus on Ted Hayes personally or on the homeless issue in Los Angeles personally, is the fact that demonstrators are coming to Los Angeles and leaving Los Angeles, and what they leave behind, they're not going to be responsible for. They're not going to be around here to be responsible for.
Well, I would say, though, that, and for example, you can compare it with the model of the Coalition on Homelessness in San Francisco, which does not cooperate with the police department in the way that Ted Hayes constantly seems to be engaging in these symbolic, almost crypto-fascist kind of maneuvers, where he seeks all kinds of endorsements from large, from highly placed public officials. The resolution he's looking for is completely empty. He wants an executive order to end homelessness without specifying specifically the kinds of programs he wants. He wants to unite Republicans, Democrats, conservatives, liberals, the same kind of rhetoric you would hear from the Grand Mufti and fascist councils in Italy and Germany in the 20s and 30s. They want everybody to get together. He doesn't want to offend any of the corporations that fund him, ARCO, that helped create the Dome Village. I mean, he seems like, you know, a nice guy, naive in a way, probably like many of us, obsessed with his own vision of things. I know what your point is. Your point is not any particular individual, but, you know, the impact of a community. But I guess we started talking about the Independent Media Center and the question of footage. We should probably get back to that. And you were saying that another thing that happened today was this controversy, or actually you talked about this controversy as a background to what happened today. Is your man leaving here? How are we doing? Anything you wish to sum up with very quickly before we babble on too long?
Sure, I would just like to sum up the fact that this is the first time that I know of in the history of this country that the progressive community has been able to have a live satellite broadcast nightly during an event like this. We have got a full television studio in the Independent Media Center. Right now, Amy Goodman is recording Democracy Now! Live via satellite. It's going to be broadcast tomorrow morning, and every evening during this week, the Independent Media Center is putting out a show, television broadcast. We're bringing in people off the streets, demonstrators, to speak their minds. We've had performance art. We've had youth come in and give performances and spoken word.
Really charged about this satellite thing. I can see that.
Extremely. I mean, it's opening doors. It's basically the media. If we don't learn the tools of the trade, and we can't play their same game, we're not going to be able to reach the same audience. That's why it's crucial that we incorporate all different aspects of media into this output, so that we are reaching the same people that they are. I mean, everyone is just a channel on the box. Everyone is just a website in cyberspace, you know. And if we're not there, and just corporate media is there, then that's all anyone's ever going to see. I mean, it's a small
tune in, turn on, and tipple down, and loggy poggy. We've been talking to...
My name is Aaron, from Santa Cruz.
And my name is Robert, also from Santa Cruz. Anything you want to add?
That's it. I hope you all tune into la.indymedia.org for the latest breaking coverage of the DNC demonstration.
Well, actually, the aftermath of the DNC.
The aftermath of the DNC here in August.
The debris of the DNC.
Yes.
Thank you.
We are crashing the party in Los Angeles.
I would hope so.
And that was tape from the L.A. coronation situation down there about 2 months ago. Interesting stuff. Now you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And with us in the studio is Scott Graham, who's apparently joined us. Scott, how you doing?
Oh, all right, Robert.
Say something else.
Hello, Robert.
How
are you doing?
Just checking those mic levels. Here we are. Professional workers here at Free Radio that we are, amateur professionals. We have an incoming call here.
It could be Chris calling back.
It could be, yeah. If we can get that. Anyway, we're going to take that in just a moment. Let's see what's happening. Scott, you want to give us an update on what's going on with the city council?
Well, on Tuesday, they're going to, it looks like, go ahead with the purchase of the Dolphin. And then to compound matters, they're going to go ahead with Title IV.
Now, what is Title IV? You want to give us a very brief summary of that?
Well, that's where they're going to intensify the building inspector's power. And they're going to create this entire level of bureaucracy in between the building inspectors and the court system to try to legislate. What people's houses and yards are supposed to look like, and it's basically some sort of Orwellian code enforcement regulations that are potentially going to displace thousands of people that are currently living in what are described as illegal accessory dwelling units, like old garages converted into apartments, or the back porches of houses converted into apartments, or even structures and backyards that were built illegally, but people now reside in them, will all suddenly be up for inspection and possible eviction of the current residents.
This is a planning department deal. It kind of went through the Planning Commission, and then it was inappropriately reported through the planning department to the city council without the changes that some of the planning commission people recommended. That's my understanding. And because of that, and the fact that it allowed for new building inspectors with standards set not by clear laws but by the city manager's office, that it actually allowed for appointment of judges, almost in-house judges, by the planning department itself, who would then give administrative rulings and issue administrative search warrants, seemed to have a number of concerns and problems that it was removed from last city council's agenda, and now suddenly it showed up again. Is it in the same form as before?
As far as I know, there's been no changes. I mean, in order to change anything from the last reading, they would have had to discuss changes, and they didn't discuss any change. They didn't even go down the list of the changes and other things that the Planning Commission suggested. They didn't even discuss that stuff.
So, in other words, it's a blank check to the staff again. I know that Fred Geiger and the Housing Committee of SCAN, and I say that because
Former Housing Committee.
No, I regard it as the current Housing Committee. I think the Steering Committee acted inappropriately here, and there's a couple of other...
The former Steering Committee.
Perhaps the former Steering Committee, yes. I think they acted inappropriately because this Housing Committee was set up by SCAN itself, and also the...
You mean a vote of the membership.
Correct. The general membership voted in to have this Housing Committee, not the Steering Committee. So the idea that because some people on the steering committee who seem to have an interest in ramming forward this Mercy Charities housing project as fast as possible with as few questions as possible.
And also have some, like, bitter rivalry with you or something.
I don't know that I'm rivals. I think you're thinking of maybe Nora Hockman and Bernice Belton. I don't feel I'm rivals to either of these people. I think Nora does good work or tries to do good work, certainly leading living wage struggle, and Bernice has, you know, put in her thoughts on the sleeping ban at different times. I know that, you know, I don't want to diss completely the work of these two people, but I know that I think they're really wrong on the Dolphin Lee issue, and from a position of power, they're taking action that I think is completely inappropriate. So I wouldn't say the former Housing Committee, I'd say the current Housing Committee, and the point is the current Housing Committee around Title IV put a very good letter forward to City Council that I guess persuaded them to pull it off the agenda, but now apparently they are doing nothing other than bringing it back to the agenda, and this is for a second reading, so it can be passed as a quick rubber stamp item at the city council meeting, and this is the evening session?
Right.
The evening session, and this is strange because I know that various council candidates, I think, had agreed to speak against a fast-tracking of Title IV, including Ed Porter and maybe Dick DeBrava, not sure about that. So it's interesting that as the election heats up, I've heard increasingly from people who I thought to be allies that because I am not a blanket supporter of Ed Porter's, for instance, necessarily, although I think he's probably one of the better candidates, that now some of his allies don't want to call in or work with us on these Title IV issues. And this is kind of strange to have this coming up when we're all fighting for these issues. And I guess some people feel the way to fight for these issues is to wait until you get people in power who will give you some muscle. Other people feel that you got to make sure that the muscle is going to go in the right direction and doesn't turn into fat fast. So, I don't know. We have an incoming call here. Perhaps the caller can help us out. Hey there, caller.
This caller can't help you out much. But I would like to hear more about the Title IV thing.
Uh-huh. Well, you actually have read Title IV from cover
to
cover.
Well, I've read huge gulps of it.
I reckon we're talking, of course, to Linda LeMaster. Hi, Linda.
Hi.
You of course, have been... Yeah. You were the chair for the Homeless Issues Task Force.
Yeah.
And you were also... You've been a member of the SCAN Housing Committee. Is there a SCAN Housing Committee, or isn't there? What's the story?
Well, I was
of that,
interested
Linda?
In seeing that the two of you there on the station have two different points of view about it, because I wouldn't want to have to decipher it.
Right, well,
that's why I quit.
Oh, you've quit?
I quit that housing committee. I have to cut back on stuff, and I can't...
Oh, so you have quit the committee. I thought that you...
Oh, yeah, I thought... You were at that meeting. I thought everyone would have been told.
Oh,
but
anyway,
it doesn't make the scananigans any less funny.
Scananigans. You know, I like that. Nicely put, Linda. Are you... I know that you are one of the people who, I guess, has been trying to press the SCAN Steering Committee to re-examine its actions of Wednesday, where it ruled that there was no housing committee anymore, and they also wanted to say the Dolphin Forum, authorized by the general membership to really discuss the matter before the public and before the city council candidates, was something also that they were disaffiliating themselves from, all without any discussion from the SCAN Housing Committee that was putting together all this stuff.
Or
and all on motion
else
from
I
Nora
know.
Hockman. Very kind of an interesting power play by folks at the center, right?
Well, that power plays are what they are. No, what interested me in the SCAN was real different than my interest in the city doing this Title IV, you know.
Yeah, I would encourage everybody, by the way, to give a call to City Council at 420-5017 and tell them Title IV, you know, must be significantly amended and debated before it can, you know.
No, it needs to be taken out of the hands of the planning department. Mm-hmm. The planning department, perhaps while they're vacating, could upgrade some of their own internal departmental policies if they really think they're going to have three new investigators and a hearing officer and get to first dibs on all the money they propose to make. The report is written as if all the landlords are these .com new gentry. And I agree that the city's been gentrified a lot and that needs
Can you clarify that, Linda? How is it written to reflect that?
Oh, it's just saying, and we, the planning department, having scored all these other new tools, because other cities do it, that was their rationale, they can also determine and decree what fees and penalties, you know. What irked me is because I've been exposed to other administrative systems that actually exist, and they have this 10-day turnaround. You know, they can come in and do the stuff Scott was talking about, telling you, no, you can't park your car that way, you have to turn it around and stuff. And if you don't fix it in 10 days, they could do whatever they want with you, unless you're lucky enough to have a lawyer.
Well, it's interesting you point out that not only are they going to be appointing their own judges, not only are the judges going to be assessing fees.
Well, we can't let them do that. They can't pick the judges.
The fee schedules are going to be determined by the planning department. I mean, this all is so in-house and so incestuous, with lack of separation of powers and checks and balances and any kind of protections. It's just, you know, I mean, much as one wants to see tenants protected, one wants to see landlords held accountable.
It's just such a change, you know, from this, the three monkeys, see no evil, hear no evil, you know, like for years, Linda Gardner, the inspector, has only gone out where she really has to, you know. I mean, the informal policy was complaint-driven.
I think this is another Tim Fitzmaurice production. He's the council member who denounced opponents as sort of landlord sympathizers.
Landlord.
Well, some of us have been landlords. You know, some of us aspire to be landlords.
Well, you yourself aren't a landlord.
I have fought with more landlords than I've gotten along with, but that's mostly because I have to rent.
Is this, you know, are the people who are opposing this landlord lackeys, Linda? That's a nice
sound. No, I think that any citizen with one whit of awareness of their own community or even just their own neighborhood or block who looks into this and could understand it would be very concerned. You know,
we're talking about
especially after what happened with the police department building. You know, it's like, I think Scott used the word a blank check. It's more like a golden egg.
And
you
by the way, the police department building, the same firm that apparently has been given us $6 million in cost overruns, or is it seven? I'm not sure. On that building is also getting additional money at the city council for another overrun on the Locust Street garage. Front Street garage, and more money for the police station. I mean, it looks like it's an endless, and this is all on the consent agenda, of course.
Wow. So the police budget upgrades are on the consent agenda?
Right. Now, I should say that we've been primarily talking about Title IV, which comes to the city council meeting on Tuesday, day after tomorrow. Don't believe the Sentinel. There is a city council meeting on Tuesday.
How late?
And it'll be happening in the evening, and I'm not quite sure where it is on the city council agenda. Do you know, Scott?
It's the second thing in the evening agenda.
Okay, so it might go on before 11.
And the first item is?
I'm not.
We don't
positive.
Know. Second item on the agenda. So folks who are interested in this stuff, if you want to come in the afternoon and try to fight the police department cost overruns, it's at 3. If you come at 5, you can try to speak up about the need for guarantees for tenants at the Dolphin before they get dumped into the merciful hands of Mercy Charities Housing without those guarantees. And then at 7, it's oral communications followed by I guess the second item on the agenda is Title IV, which is a kind of a bill of powers for the building inspectors, appointing new building inspectors, giving them new powers, essentially the power to look at the house from the outside and then walk up to the door and say, I'd like to come in. You know, I don't have to go get a warrant. People are going to say, okay, now, right now you have to do it on a complaint basis, as I understand.
Well, you know, one good thing about it is that if it were put together right, it actually does give recourse and remedy a lot faster than what you could do with the courts. And for most people, you don't have that lawyer expense. I don't see...
You're talking about recourse for the tenants.
Well, I don't see how where there's tenants involved, they're not going to be impacted badly, no matter what they set up.
Well, of course, the problem is, it has been pointed out by Fred Geiger and Scott Graham and others here, is that there's no tenant protection for the people in the accessory dwelling units. That's a kind of hard one for
there's
me.
There's no tenant protection in this thing at all. It's
and that
about
is, that
give
is
us
that,
more staff,
that those,
and we'll
those,
use it to get money for the city by making penalties out of stuff.
Those who live in garages that are, say, closer than 5 feet to the property line or that don't have an enclosed parking structure, can be, you know, can't even complain at all, because if they do, the city can just shut down those units because you can't make changes to really legalize them under the current law.
Over my dead body,
unless,
they'll shut it
unless
down.
Unless there is, of course, a grandfathering clause which puts them into the law as legal units, and that is, as far as I know, it's both not a part of this, and I haven't heard from any council members, maybe the two of you have, whether this actually has been added to the bill as we've requested. Scott, have you heard anything about that?
No, I don't. They can't add anything to it unless they discuss it up there,
in
and they
public.
Haven't discussed it yet. So unless they decide to discuss it on Tuesday, grandfathering these...
Well, there will be a discussion period, right? I mean, they can't...
Well, there'll be a public comment period, and they'll discuss, they'll discuss it, but... Whether or not they bring up these items for discussion, you know, even if we talk about them from the floor, they don't necessarily have to talk about
and
anything.
And you haven't heard from any council.
We should bring in a CPA. We should bring in a private sector Cisco analyst to address that thing.
Cisco,
Yeah.
Well, I don't know about Cisco, but well, Linda, what about anything else we've been talking about you want to weigh in on? I know that you've been at the center of some of these controversies, or at least you've kept a very close eye on what's been going on.
Yeah, is that a funny pun about my cataract surgery?
Certainly not.
I've been told I don't have much of a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
No,
well,
I have been a witness more than before in the last year and a half about all the ideas of non-action going on, and a really bigger concern for how it impacts the displaced and homeless and transitioning families.
Mm-hmm.
This
no
kid next door to me got kicked out of his house because he was a cousin instead of a sibling.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's trying to learn how to make it with one of the packs of young guys downtown.
Right.
And have no place to go.
So maybe what we might call this the Gang Creation Act, this dolphin transfer, since some of those young folks are now going to have an opportunity to join some street gangs who, when they get kicked out of the dolphin
apartments.
Well, you
don't even have to join them these days. The government will impute gangliness to you if you just happen to be caught in the wrong neighborhood.
I'm not really gangly. I used to be gangly, but I ain't gangly anymore.
I don't know. I join as many gangs as I can. I think it's a good idea. Protective coloration, and there's always a potential of a royal community bursting through.
Well,
So
what should we really be talking about? I mean, if we didn't have to spend our time fighting Title IV, fighting the Dolphin Project.
We don't have to fight it. We have to quickly take it over, expose it to the light of day, alert the people in the whole city, no matter what they are, especially tenants on fixed incomes, and make sure that they crack it open. It's just stupid the way it is. And
if we didn't have to fight this stuff, what should we really be talking about? What kinds of issues should we really be working on in this election and trying to educate candidates around? What would be your choice, Linda?
That's Robert. I just called and asked you that question.
I know you ran for city council in 1992. In fact, you were endorsed by Scott Kennedy in that year. Now, of course, you...
Yes, that was before the feminists on his staff rejected him.
I see. And this year you have or haven't endorsed Scott Kennedy?
I have.
Oh, dear.
I had second thoughts and thought I shouldn't when I got to be part of the Green interview team.
Uh-huh.
And we were raising the question
about
the
sleeping ban.
So
have you withdrawn that endorsement?
No, I haven't. I want to work on his campaign. I had real reasons for endorsing him. They're probably stupid reasons politically, but they're real to me, you know. He's the kind of guy that goes out and... paints over the ugly graffiti and stuff.
He's the kind of guy who goes out and makes sure that people get arrested for sitting on the sidewalk. And he's the kind that goes out
well,
and makes out
you
to
know,
make sure that
we confronted him about that.
Hang on. He makes sure that people have a police review board that's completely toothless. He makes sure the beach boardwalk.
Yeah, I resent Kennedy's role in the setting up and co-opting.
I think you may be ditzing out on me, Linda. Hang on.
Ditzing out on you.
Yes.
CPRB.
Hey, thank you.
You were right.
Yeah. Well,
he screwed the CPRB up.
Yeah,
pretty much single-handedly.
He did, and the BSAW plan, he tried to hand it over to Charlie Canfield for development. Now you're supporting this
man. What gets me the most
has is he,
the
wait a minute,
Department
wait a minute, excuse me, excuse
money.
Me. Has he changed his position on any of these issues, or are you just sort of
I'll
saying it's okay, you. Whatever?
No, I'm saying that the things I know that he does it with his hands and in the community, you
well,
know?
Well, maybe he should become
he
a carpenter.
He kept Camellia Center from being buried.
Linda,
you know, he helped them get a building so they still exist.
What exactly has he done recently?
I don't know.
He gained about 20 pounds.
He had a TV show on Channel 3, but that doesn't help.
Scott,
what?
Please.
What did you say, Scott?
He said he gained about 20 pounds. That's not
fair.
Yeah. I myself am a corpulent
sometimes,
guy.
Sometimes I would vote for against people on account of whether their clothes fit or not.
Right.
If they don't know how to buy pants,
Linda,
how are they going to run the city?
I got to tell you, I don't see anything. You've got given me no indication of anything he's done recently that might make me want to change my opinion.
On free radio,
I'm really
can't
surprised
and
you have
justify
that,
my
you,
position. I'm just saying that
right.
some things that I believe in, he's done, and there's not another one in the whole pack that I could say that about, of people running now, you know.
Right,
all
well, everyone is entitled to their view. I'm just, again, I think that your position is very strange, ignores key things, and is also does a disservice to people, because I think Kennedy is the most well-funded candidate, and he's the most likely to win unless he is fought really strongly, and he needs to be fought. He doesn't need to be endorsed. You know,
true liberal.
This is by people who know better. And Linda, of all people, you know better. So
no, I do know better. I know that's the kind of guy that takes in runaway kids.
Right.
You know.
Well, that's
like
nice,
Tom
but that
Black.
Has nothing.
He didn't cut mustard with the so-called progressive.
It has nothing.
Really has nothing to do with the city council. It has nothing
what?
To do with the city council activity.
Well, if he gets elected, it would. I guess I have to hide from you if he gets elected.
No, you'll have to hide from him.
I intend to make him accountable.
Oh, Linda, okay, that's fine. I hope you're successful.
What I wanted to ask you about, I thought you could talk, and I bet I'm not the only one who wants to. What does this concept progressive mean? Does it have any
sort of literary or historical meaning? I know it has nothing to do.
It
has nothing to do with Scott Kennedy, and it has nothing to do with the way the SCAN steering committee acted on Wednesday.
It has nothing to do with.
You know, the failure to act on issues like rent control and decriminalization of sleep, I think, and I don't really, you know, I don't care about the label. What I care about is substance on the issues, I guess, is what I'm looking at.
Well, there's a substance deficiency on our slate of
choices.
Yeah,
I don't think
here.
We should endorse candidates who not only push that deficiency, but also mislead.